Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week we'll be hearing about the start of the Round Ireland Yacht Race from Wicklow Sailing Club, and we have details of the Wexford Maritime Festival on our webpage. First this week to one of the great maritime ports on this island, Derry, which earlier this week welcomed the return of the Clipper Round the World Yacht Race. Happily, the Derry yacht was first across the line into its home port. Our intrepid reporter, Mary McBreen, was there for Seascapes, and over the past few days, out and about on the quayside and at Culmore Point, where some of the Clipper sailors got a chance to sail in a foil punt.
Sue Doherty, and I'm with Tegan and Dara Hannan, two granddaughters, and my daughters, two daughters, and two son-in-laws, and two more grandchildren are out in the sailboats. The rain's put a dampener on this. The third day I've been up. It's just a pity it's raining today. Seeing the Clipper coming in on Monday, and I was hearing all the buzz of everything, and all the tents and everything about it. It's brilliant, it's great for the city.
My name is Brian McDonald. I'm a boat builder in Greencastle, and our family has been building boats for over 250 years, and we built a lot of these foil punts and the older version, which has been the Drontham that everybody talks about nowadays. But the foil punt was developed from the Drontham as a smaller version to fish in the river here, rather than foil. So that's what developed the foil punt as such. Well, the foil punt was originally built for fishing in the shallow waters and the loch here. And eventually they developed a regatta for them just to sail for pastime. A lot of interest in the sailing race and the Clipper race itself, especially. So, quite a lot of interest here too this evening. And to see the Clipper sailors sailing the punts, it's different.
Brian McDonald of Greencastle, who spoke to Seascapes on Wednesday night. Sir Robin Knox Johnston is the man who started this venture. He told Mary McBreen how it all came about.
I was in Greenland mountaineering and a friend of mine, Chris Bonington, he told me how much it cost to climb Mount Everest. I thought, that's an awful lot of money. What's the sailing equivalent? It must be a circumnavigation. And I worked out that I could actually provide a boat, a skipper, clothing, food, port visits, everything to someone for about half what it cost to climb Mount Everest. So I thought, let's see if I'm right. Put an advert in the papers. Got 8,000 responses. Thought, right, we better do this. So we did. The advert went in 95. And we started building the boats then. The first race took place in 96. I think the main change is that whereas it was more of an adventure to go around the world then, now it has become a race. I mean, it's still a big adventure, but I think people do appreciate it's a race. And the result is we've had to, as we've changed our fleets, because you renew the fleets about every 8 years, we've had to reflect that in this style of boat we use. So these boats, this latest fleet, which this is their first race, are much more racy boats than the previous race. And the previous fleet was much more racy than the previous one. So we're constantly evolving the fleet. Well, it's 70 feet long. There's 12 of them. They're identical. It can sweep up to 24 people, although normally we sail with about 20. It complies with all the government regulations required for commercial yachts. And they're quite slithery. They go quite well. Crews seem to like them. They're quite responsive. I think from our point of view, the great thing is that the sailing of this race has been very, very even, and it's still open to anyone to win at this late stage. So the boats have proved that they're identical. The only difference is in the crewing. 40% of our crew now have never been on a boat before when they come to us. We train them. I have to say they're the easiest ones to train because they've no bad habits picked up elsewhere. But we train them up. It's a pretty tough three-week training. That's to turn them into seamen, really. They learn about racing subsequently. But I want them safe on the boats to start with. Calibre, it's changed slightly. The age probably stayed about the same. Average age of the men's about 39, average age of the ladies 33, 34. What has changed is the number of non-Brits doing it. There's 42 nationalities in this race. Second biggest group after the Brits are the Australians. They've really taken to it in a big way, and of course they're very competitive, which adds to the fun. I think it's ordinary people looking to do something extraordinary. They want time out. They're saying, you know, I've worked hard, got a bit of money together, I want to go and do something that's not easy. It shouldn't be easy. There's no pride in doing something easy. Always choose the hard things in life, then you've got the pride of achievement. But they want to go out there and do something, and we notice a huge difference in them at the end. People have gone all the way around the world. The 18-year-olds, a year later, are 24 years old in maturity terms, and it's very noticeable how much they've matured. Their old friendships will disappear because they're so much older inside their heads. But even the chief executive of a company who's 60 is standing there with that increased self-confidence, been out there, taken on nature in the raw. I've come back and I've learned a lot. I'm now a darn good seaman and a good racer. And you can see it in their stance. They're standing there a little more proud. And they've every right to be a little more proud. As an 8-year-old who made the decision that I was going to sea, I made it when I was 8. I've always wanted to go to sea. I went to sea in the Merchant Navy. I spent a couple of years in the Royal Navy. I've been racing boats for the last 45 years. Longer, actually. I just love going to sea. At least I'm my own boss out at sea. I've got no civil servant ordering me around, telling me what to do. I make the decisions. I think in any circumnavigation, there's two areas which are really challenging. The Southern Ocean, which goes around south of Africa, Australia and South America, and the North Pacific, which is equally bad, and that is where the big storms are. And this really is the peak, as far as sailors are concerned. This is getting to the top of Everest. Cape Horn is just the end of it. You're turning left, getting out of it. It's the surviving in the Southern Ocean or the North Pacific that's the real challenge to a sailor. You go above 40 north in the Pacific, it's just as bad as the Southern Ocean. And if people don't realise it, they think it's all balmy and sunny. No, it is not. So these are the biggest challenges sailors have, getting into those seas. And they're big. I mean, you're talking about 1,800-foot waves, you know, as tall as a 10-storey building. And they're coming towards you, going from horizon to horizon. It's too late to say, I wish I wasn't here. You can't press the video button and change the programme. You're stuck with it. You've got to go through with it.
And I believe you're making a return to competitive racing later this year?
Oh, just a little bit, yeah. I got the boat and I thought, I should do some sailing. Well, there's a Round British Isles race in August. I'll do that. That's two-handed. And then I'll do the Route de Rome, which is a French race from St. Malo to Guadeloupe in November. That's a single-handed race. That'll be fun. What sparks my passion, actually, is watching the way our crews change, watching the way they become really good hands around the deck. Their knowledge has increased. And you realise, actually, I'd sail with any of them. You know, they're good now. When they started off, they're a little bit hesitant, a little bit apprehensive. Now you look at them, they're walking around the deck with confidence. They know what goes on the boat. They're ready to take that boat out into bad weather. They're confident in themselves. And that, I think, probably gives me more satisfaction than anything else about the Clipper race. Oh, I don't think we've ever had a reception like the one we got here in Derry, Londonderry. I mean, you know, China's fantastic and the city really put it out. But there's 8 million people in Qingdao. That's the same as the population of the whole of Ireland. And they're all in one city. Here we're talking about the city of Londonderry. And when you see it, 2-3 deep, all the way from the Peace Bridge, right the way down to the end of the docks, and it's thick with people, all cheering. Of course, it helped. It was their boat coming in first. I couldn't arrange that. I couldn't have arranged that, but it was a wonderful result. And you saw that enthusiasm. And the way, you know, it's carried on through the week. I think this weekend is going to be a fantastic weekend. I'm not sure how I'm going to walk between my hotel and here, though. Need to find a back route because the front here will be jammed. Oh, I think Britain has become sea-blind as a nation. We've forgotten that we are an island and we need ships. You know, 95% of everything that comes into and out of the country comes by sea. And we've got a ridiculously small navy now. And the merchant fleet is almost, it's there, but it's not what we used to have when I was at sea. And we've got to remember that. We've got to go back to saying, wait a minute. If one of our main ports gets blocked, we starve. It is as simple as that. We've got to keep our ports open. So anything that focuses attention on the sea is good. But in yachting terms, Britain is a world leader. I mean, any time the Brits are appearing in any competition around the world, you know they're going to be serious competition. Ben Ains is just the peak, the tip of the iceberg. We have got some really superb sailors. And we need in design, we need in build, materials and everything else. We are a nation that's looked up to. So yachting in Britain is a big industry. Brings in a lot of money. Half of its output is exported. And we have to export to live.
The fleet were met by the Mayor of Derry, Brenda Stevenson, with great jubilation on the quayside.
It's been a brilliant week for Derry, so it has. Obviously, we invested in the Clipper Around the World Yacht Race in 2012, just to see, you know, a bit of a risk take to see how a large-scale event would go in, Derry, you know, in and around Derry City Council, and especially around the river. It was a huge success then. We had planned for in and around 20,000 people to visit the city during the event, and we actually had over 200,000 people. And it turned out to be like a cornerstone or a building block of everything that we would do in 2013. As part of the inaugural UK City of Culture Year. Obviously, as we rolled 2013 out, we always said that there would be a legacy, and we knew Clipper would be part of that legacy. So we've been planning for the last 9 months since the boats started off on the race, and we were delighted to welcome them here to Legendary on Monday morning with our own boat, the Derry, Londonderry Dura Clipper, skippered by Sean McCarter, coming in first place. It broke the curse of the Clipper, and we were the first home boat to come into our hometown first on any leg of the race. So we're delighted with that. The marina looks fantastic down at the back of the River Foyle. All the boats that are up and down there now. The Continental Market's fantastic. The Legendary Maritime Festival that's going on for the duration of the Clipper boats being in the city up until next Sunday is absolutely buzzing. You know, the back of the quay is thronged with people. And then we're down here in Cullmore Point tonight, and it's very, very busy here too, where they're doing a bit of punt racing along with the skippers.
Yeah, my name is Mark Light, and I was the legendary skipper 2 years ago, so I'm well used to this place.
And what's been your involvement this year?
I'm now the deputy race director, so I'm helping to manage the race, and we follow the boats all the way around the world and look after them in port, and really enjoyed.
And how has this week been here in Derry for you?
This week's been amazing. It's been amazing for me personally, you know, coming back here after 2 years. Seeing all the faces and experiencing everything that I experienced 2 years ago. I was very proud as a skipper 2 years for this city. And, you know, Sean McCarter and the current legendary team have just won into here. And, yeah, it's just an amazing welcome.
And do you notice a change this time around compared to 2 years ago? Is it even bigger?
Yeah, the only change I see is that it's bigger, better and higher profile, which is, we knew it would be. None of us knew what to expect 2 years ago. And when we turned up, we were absolutely blown away by the welcome. And it's exactly the same, but bigger this time.
And what for you makes Clipper the race that it is? What makes it special?
Clipper Round the World is a special race because it's one professional skipper, completely amateur crew, so anybody can do the race, and it's a race first and foremost. It's a challenge against the elements, but it's also a challenge to, you know, get on with people. And you know, when the weather gets bad, you can't use your remote and turn it off. You know, when things are not going well, you can't get off the boat.
For Seascapes, Mary went aboard the Clipper yacht Switzerland and was given a guided tour of the vessel by crew member Samantha Tosh, a native of Derry.
So my name is Samantha Tosh. I'm a crew member of Team Switzerland, Clipper 70 Fleet, and we're about to take a little tour of the boat around as we're berthed in Foyle Marina in my home city in Derry. Go. Start at the back of the boat, which is one of the most important areas here. This is our navigation nav room. As you can see, it's quite compact, and at any stage in here we would have two or three people in here, so constantly monitoring everything that's happening with the wind, with the boat speed, and monitoring the weather. So we've got two main charts here. One's our GPS, showing us our location, and one's a C-Pro, which is showing us the weather formations and forecasts for the next few days. So these people are the tacticians of the boat, and they're really working out all the tactics and where we should be going, how fast we should be going there, and gathering all the data that we've gathered from, combining all the data that we've had since the race started in September, and analysing that so we know how fast we should be going at certain sea conditions and with certain sail plans up. So it's quite a lot of technical work. Once we come into shallower waters, we then revert to the old-fashioned chart methods, so you'll always find charts on here as well. What else is in here? We've got a logbook where we record entries every hour on the hour, so it just notes all the latitude, longitudes, all the data, you know, speed that we're doing, wind conditions, and any remarks on the sail plans and what's been happening and the diesel tanks and whatnot. So that's mainly the nav station. The berth's closest to the nav station. You've got the skipper here on the starboard side and the watch leaders on the port side, and that's the way they're closest to where the information is happening. So as things develop, if there's a change in the weather conditions, these guys would be woken up, and you know, then there would be a little a decision panel made, if you like, as to what our next move should be. That information is then fed up through this hatch if the weather's good, but usually just through this radio. That information then is fed up to the people on the deck, the watch that is actually on shift, and we'll take it from there if we need to change the sail plan or change the course or whatever. So this is the centre of the boat, really. This is the brains of the boat. Okay, so then if you walk down the corridor on the port side, this is the one side of the accommodation. You can see it's very compact. We actually share bunks. There's two people assigned to each bunk. So one watch would be up on deck and the other person would actually be sleeping. And so that's good incentive to get out of your bed, is the fact that somebody wants into it. So, you know, you don't really have a choice. So as you can see, it's just very compact, very, very basic, very little room for storage. The bilge is during your time off and you're actually in the bed. This is just full of traffic because you don't really get peace and quiet. So if you're a light sleeper, you have to bring some serious earplugs, or actually exhaustion in the end will get you and you'll just fall asleep. These beneath our feet, all these floorboards come up every watch, so every 4 hours during the evening, every 6 hours, and these are all pumped out. That's to keep the bilges water free and dry, so that we as a boat go lighter, and obviously we're constantly checking for any leaks or any breakages in the hull. Okay. So let's move forward on the port side and come into the engine room. So I'm an engineer by trade, and we all have additional duties that we have to do during the boat, during the sail. One of my duties is to assist with the maintenance of the engine and the generators. Do you want a wee quick look in? This is nice. This is a warm room. So one of the benefits of being an engineer on the boat is I get to dry my socks in the engine room, which is like a massive big thing. So this is our motor, and this is the generator. So I would be doing the daily checks and the watch checks, of topping up the oil, checking the fan belt, doing the cooling system, just like you would in your car, you know, before you go set off on a journey. This, we would use the motor in, you know, in emergency situations. For example, it was man overboard, so it's absolutely essential that this is ready to go when we need it to go. For emergency situations, obviously during the race, we're under sail. Okay. If we just move forward into the galley then. Wet lockers, one each side, port watch starboard side. So everything looks the same. This is a nightmare when you're in the middle of the night trying to locate your jacket. As you can see, it's just very difficult. Everything, we're all in the same outfits. It's tricky living on board with 11 other people trying to do exactly the same thing that you want to do at exactly the same time. That's the challenge, really, is moving around this vessel in coordination with 11 other people. Frustrating at times, but also good crack. So, in the galley, as you can see, it's very compact, very, very basic. We can only fit, really, 3 pans on the stove at any time. The oven floats. Okay, so you actually, in rough conditions, you would strap yourself into that, so to stop you falling back. And you always wear your oilies, your, you know, protective, waterproof, like, dungarees when you're working in the galley, because the spillage is such a big risk. It's really one of the most dangerous places to be working is in here. I'm very, very small. I'm only 5 foot, so I normally spend most of my time in here balancing off ledges of cupboards and trying to reach into the higher things as people are requesting various drinks and various condiments. This is the most social area of the boat. I mean, it's very basic, but it is the only time that we actually get together as a team. We would be eating here, and you know, we could have 5-10 minutes before we head up onto our watch up deck, or we crash out and go to bed. So this is really the sociable time for us, the rest time.
Samantha Tosh on board Switzerland talking to Mary McBreen. Finally, let's hear from the skipper of the Derry yacht, yachtsman and sailor from Donegal, Sean McCarter.
Well, I think we're quite a lucky crossing in a lot of respects. For the North Atlantic, it was probably as calm an ocean crossing as we've ever had, so we're lucky there. We're lucky to lead the fleet out and gain quite a strong lead. We were unlucky that we had to give a lot of that away to reposition ourselves for the high pressure system that has been giving you guys such nice weather last week. And then ultimately we were very lucky to finish in first position, just a few miles ahead of Garmin, who came in second. It's hard to describe, but you know, it was a dream for us and a race that we identified really early on that we wanted to perform well in. And yeah, luckily we managed to do it. But no, I think the first boat came out to meet us off Malin Head at 5 a.m. And sort of from then on, it just, you know, the flotilla just grew and grew. And I think by the time we pulled in, there were about 20 or 30 boats in support, and the banks of the Foyle were just lined with people. The mayor, mayor pulled some strings and got the schools let out early. So yeah, there was just thousands cheering on the banks. It was just incredible support, really, really emotional. It's been really good catching up with friends and family. Really busy as usual. The stopovers are almost as, you know, more hectic than the actual racing. But no, it's been brilliant, and really proud to kind of, you know, showcase our home city as, you know, to all the crew and all the rest. So I'm really lucky. Got it right from the outset, got a really good bunch, and they've made it really easy for me. So at this point, they pretty much run the boat. You know, I'm not involved that much, but which is all credit to them. You know, they're a great team, and it's a privilege to lead them. Well, safety, I guess, always comes first. We've had quite a few close calls, and we always put priority on safety. But after that, just having fun. You know, it's people. A lot of the guys, well, they pay a lot of money to be there, and you don't want anybody leaving, you know, disheartened by their experience. You want them to have a laugh, and I think we've got a really good mix of having fun but being competitive. The last big one was in the North Pacific when we had a man overboard, Andrew Taylor, and that was very challenging, but again, all credit to the guys. You know, they just went through the motions that we trained for, and nobody panicked, and yeah, it was although challenging, it ultimately had a happy ending, thank God. We finished the race on the 12th of July, and then we have to hand the boats back, but yeah, really looking forward to getting back down. I live down in Palma, getting back down to the wife, putting the feet up, and just really not having to look to a weather forecast or a position report, you know, having more than 6 hours where you don't have to stress out about, you know, where you're going to position the boat next, and that. So yeah, can't wait for that. The only thing I've sort of signed up for, we're doing some regattas, the Maxi Worlds in Sardinia in September, and then Val de Saint-Tropez at the end of September, October. So that's with a boat I used to work on, and a lot of my friends are still involved there, so it'd be a great way to do a little bit of sailing and catch up with friends, more importantly. But after that, nothing planned yet. Derry, Londonderry, Dora sponsoring a home, you know, home port stop mixed in. Yeah, it's not even, you know, a once in a lifetime thing. It's, you know, so lucky the way it's all sort of panned out, but But yeah, just privileged or honoured to be able to.
The Clipper Ventures Round the World Yacht Race is en route this weekend for Den Helder, and we wish them fair sailing and salute all those who participated. We wish all those taking part in the Round Ireland Yacht Race fair seas. This weekend, one of Ireland's largest maritime festivals gets underway in Wexford. On the quayside, there'll be lots of great children's activities. A major air, sea and rescue demonstration will take place in full view of Wexford Quay at 3 o'clock on Saturday, and they have over 40 events, free activities and attractions. If you visit the website www.visitwexford.ie. The Red Bull Cliff Diving World Series makes its first European stop this Sunday on Inishmore on the Aran Islands at the Serpent's Lair, or Paul na Pesht, a 28-metre deep blowhole on our western seaboard. You can read more on www.redbullcliffdiving.com. An exhibition with the title Sea Fever is on all summer at the Catherine Hammond Gallery in Glengariff. It's heartily recommended by several regular Seascapes listeners, and if you're in that part of the world, they suggest, do drop in. Next week here on Seascapes, your maritime programme, we make contact with intrepid Irish rower Philip Kavanagh as he rows from Monterey to Hawaii across the Pacific on board Team Battleborn. We talk to the author of Kinsale Harbour, A History, John Tullier, and we'll have copies in our Seascapes competition. And we preview Volvo Cork Week at the Royal Cork Yacht Club. All that and more. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.